Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, this is Sherry Bayer, and you're listening to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network, coming to you from Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm super excited to be here. This is my pilot recording, so thanks for listening. In addition to being your host, I am the founder and president of Bayer Public Relations, which is a full-service PR consulting and marketing agency based in New York City that specializes in culinary and hospitality. Basically, that means I represent a lot of restaurants. So over the years, I've met and worked with many industry professionals who basically have the same restaurant clientele as I do. However, they provide a completely different service. So the inspiration for this show, All in the Industry, is dedicated to those behind-the-scenes talents in the hospitality industry. As experienced restaurateurs know, it takes more than great food to be successful. Rather, it's a combination of location, design, ambiance, marketing, and more. In this 14-episode series, I will take you through the process of opening a restaurant by chatting with experienced and dedicated hospitality professionals who each have a unique and invaluable service for restaurants. This is the ideal show for anyone who dreams of opening a restaurant or simply wants to learn more about what it takes to be a restaurateur. Now, before I introduce my first guest, since I am a restaurant publicist, I'm going to tip off the show with my PR tip of the week. So today's tip is to be charitable. I believe that giving back to the community and those in need will not only make a difference in people's lives, but it will be rewarding to you too. There are many amazing culinary-focused organizations that you can get involved in. A few that I've been involved in are Share a Strength, City Harvest, City Meals, and the Food Bank of New York. And there's many different ways to get involved, from attending and participating in events to donating an auction item and making a contribution. So I believe that the more you give, the more you will receive. So be charitable. And that is my tie-in to my guest today, who I'm thrilled to have here because we met through the industry and is a good friend of mine. And it is Joe Allegro, the Director of Culinary and Events for Share Our Strength, a national organization working to end childhood hunger in America. So welcome, Joe.
Hi. Thank you, Sherry. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Great. It's great to be here in this very hip section of Brooklyn.
Well, so you came all the way out from Jersey. Now, you've never been to Bushwick.
No, I've never been to Bushwick. I grew up on Long Island, lived in Manhattan for about 15 years, then, you know, moved to Jersey where I got the big L on my forehead as the big loser.
Oh, among I wouldn't all my, say that.
Yeah. No, it's actually really nice. And now, you know, it's a bedroom community. It's a half an hour from Manhattan. So I feel like I really haven't given up my New York roots by moving out to Jersey.
Right.
We are missing a lot of the food scene, though, out in the Garden State. We need some good restaurants out there.
Well, maybe Roberta's will open a branch out in Jersey. But meanwhile, we can grab a bite after this recording.
It'd be great. I'd love to.
So I have here a brief bio of yours, which I will share, even though I think we have to go back further because this begins in, I believe, 1999. But here, just so listeners can get a feel of what you've done and how impressive your career has been, I will say Joe's bio, which is, as a veteran of entertainment marketing, Joe brought his expertise to the Food Network as its executive vice president of live events for 5 years. He was instrumental in building the Food Network's success by delivering its message via live events to every major city in the U.S. In 2004, Joe joined Share Our Strength. By developing national chef-related programs and culinary events, he has helped raise over $7 million to ensure that no child in America grows up hungry. He's enlisted the support and talent of the country's finest chefs and restaurateurs, including Thomas Keller, Bobby Flay, Kat Cora, Michelle Bernstein, and Michael Simon, and many, many more. I could go on and on. So your background, I'm starting here with the Food Network, but how did you get to the Food Network?
Yeah, good question, Sherry. So think of the time. It was 1990. It was the mid-90s. I had a entertainment marketing company that I owned with a partner, Rich Gore and myself, and he and I were very stealth at bringing entertainment opportunities to corporate America. So we were very involved in the Hollywood studio business of product placement in movies, tie-in promotions with big studio releases, and we worked on all the films back then.
Was that based in New York?
Yes, we were based in New York. Okay. We were sort of the Madison Avenue approach to Hollywood. While a lot of the placement and marketing firms for Hollywood were in L.A., our point of difference was we were based here in New York. We felt that gave us that edge that we needed. And while we worked on movies a lot, we also grew into the concert promotions and sponsorship business. So we worked with every concert promoter and every touring act that you could remember from those days, and also were bringing them sponsorship and partnership opportunities like Visa and Paul McCartney, a number of those types of deals, and venue deals with Pioneer Electronics and here locally with the Beacon Theater. And again, we worked with all the concert promoters. So we basically were working movies and music and bringing corporate America to those entities. What we saw happening, actually, and this is pre-Food Network, TV chefs on PBS were something that we identified as a sort of untapped market that could be promoted even in a bigger way other than just their cookbook. So from doing all the concerts and the movie promotions, we realized that if we put chefs on stage and sold tickets, we were already selling sponsorships very well, so we decided to create our own cooking concert, if you will. So in 1995, we designed the Great Chefs of TV Festival, which were live touring events, putting chefs on stage, selling sponsorship around them, and selling tickets in the same way you would a rock concert. And we had merchandising opportunities, and it was a wildly successful start right out of the gate, and we realized we had something there. We brought the Food Network in somewhere along our fifth event, just as a mere $5,000 sponsor. They were fledgling.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was small at the time. And we used some of their chefs on stage. And almost in a jokingly manner, we said to the owners at the time, they were owned by Providence Journal way back, and there's a book written about this. I'll get into that later. But we said, you know, if you ever want to partner or talk about a bigger business, let's discuss it. A week later, they actually called us and said, we're very interested in what you're doing, and we want to bring you into the network in a bigger way. So we created Food Network's first subsidiary called Chef Events, and Rich and myself ran that for a number of years. And we were doing live events called Cooking Across America. And these were playing in all major markets, but Food Network had no brand recognition at the time. So we were actually, and they didn't have a marketing department. So we were its consumer marketing department. We were helping on the launch in sevens. We were helping bring advertisers to the Food Network. And while we were our own G&A and revenue generating operation for Food Network, we were serving a lot of purposes there and a lot of public relations for them as well. And then to cut this story short, they eventually approached us and bought the company out whole. And then we ran as members of the senior staff of Food Network for 5 years. And I was executive vice president. It was a lot of fun. And we helped build the Food Network back in those early days.
Wow, I didn't know that story at all.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So who were some of the chefs, if you remember, that you initially were working with on these live events? Just
back,
curious.
Sure, yeah. You know, again, Food Network had just launched, and their names were not household recognizable names, so we were tapping into the PBS chefs a lot. So those were of course, we worked with Jacques Pepin, who, you know, to this day is still one of the greatest of all times, you know, revered, I should say. And, of course, there's Martin Yan, and we worked with Marian Esposito, Nick Stellino, who's on PBS still, and there's a whole host of those PBS chefs that are either bigger or smaller, depending upon which market you go into. And we would strategically select those chefs that we would promote. And the Food Network would throw in their talent for each event. So our very first event, we actually worked with David Rosengarten, who was, you know, for a long time a big name on the Food Network, and is very successful now doing his, you know, as a David Rosengarten brand.
Yeah, I've been going to his new events. He's been doing some wine-related late-night industry events, that, and he has a mix of things. But yeah, he's someone I think back at the Food Network in the very beginning who was there and very successful.
David is a great guy. And so then we would start to incorporate more and more Food Network celebrities as the Food Network grew. Because we started, they had, and I remember celebrating when they had 25 million subscribers. It was a big deal for us at the time. You know, now they're in 100 million homes. They're saturated. There's no, you know, they're in every home in the country, practically, I think. And so it was, though, at the time, at one point, the Emeril Network, as everybody knows, Emeril Lagasse was the name.
Right.
They didn't really even know the Food Network name. Sometimes they just knew it. And, of course, it was TV Food Network back then. But Emeril was the name that everybody recognized. And when we put him on tour, it was a big deal. We sold out really quickly. And but we were.
Should I give a bam?
You could give a bam. We should.
Bam.
Bam. And
you have to, right?
It was great. Robin Leach at the time was our MC, and Bill Boggs. These are some great names from the.
I remember all these names
from the days. And Sarah Moulton was there, and then we started to use Bobby Flay more and more, and Alton Brown and Tyler, and you know, and we, you know, and we grew it from there, and it became very, very successful. And then it sort of kind of we felt it had kind of outgrown its need at the time, because then the Food Network grew so large that it was a nice to have. I don't think it was a necessity at a certain point, I should say. And we kind of went our own ways. And it was, but it was a great time period. And we're written about in the book that Alan Sorkin had released recently called
Sulkin, right?
Sulkin.
Sorry. Yeah.
Well, I'm bad with names. I'm surprised. I can't even remember my own.
I'm much better with faces than names myself. But I went to the book party he had, and I bought the book, and now I just have to read it. But I need to find the time to read it. I see his little tidbits he puts up on Twitter, and they're all so fascinating. These behind the scenes stories.
True. Yeah, it's amazing how many great stories there were, and his interviews were so long with me that. You know, I think he was looking for a little bit more dirt than I was. I'm close to the vest. I didn't want to, you know, there's a lot of great stories, but it's a lot of personal stories. So I thought somebody should remain personal. So he and I stuck to business, and I thought he wrote a tremendous book, and I'm sure he's going to do really well with it. Really, after Food Network, I think you'll find this interesting. I thought that it was a time and a place where chefs could leave the TV world and take the live stage as a new format, and I created and executive produced a show called Chef's Theater, a musical feast, and it ran on Broadway. I had some partners that were from the Broadway world that had done Ragtime and Showboat and a bunch of other great hits, and we created a musical using chefs as the centerpiece on stage.
I remember that. I didn't go to the show, but I remember reading about it. I should have gone.
You should have called it. We would have taken care of you then.
I didn't know you then, but... Your next project, whatever it is, I will certainly be there always.
You're VIP every time.
Oh, fabulous.
Yeah, and that was a great opportunity to showcase chefs and their live performance and in a live environment, because even though it's semi-scripted, we had real legit Broadway singers and dancers built around and live music, original songs that were written for it. With a great team, Casey Nicolau, who was our choreographer, he went on to—he's like the best director on Broadway right now. He won, you know, Tonys for Spamalot and A Drowsy Chaperone, and he's done a lot of great things since Chef's Theater. So we had a great cast and a great crew. And Tyler Florence was our opening act. We worked with Todd English, with David Burke. You know, we had some really great names that we put on stage, and we actually asked each one of them to sing a song. So if you can imagine. Todd English is right after he gets done cooking, and then he breaks into a song. There's no, what is that song he did? Is it,
I don't know. Is it on YouTube? Can we find this somewhere?
It was a little bit. They weren't able to film it back then, so we. Mm. Well, unfortunately, we don't have a copy of it. But yeah, wow. And he had a good voice.
I'm not surprised. I don't know why I'm not surprised, but I'm not.
Yeah, it was great. You're nobody till somebody loves you. That's the song he sang, and if you see him. Ask him if he'll do it for you.
I will look for him just so I can get him to sing for me. So, all right, we're going to take a break here. And when we get back, we are going to dive into Share Our Strength and how chefs and restaurateurs can get involved in the organization. So you're listening to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
Mm-hmm. You are listening to Baby Boys Blues by the California Honey Drops on the Heritage Radio Network.org.
Welcome back. This is Sherry Bayer, and you're listening to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm here today. My guest is Joe Allegro of Share a Strength, and we were just talking about Joe's background, and now we're going to dive into how did you get involved with Share a Strength? I know you joined in 2004 with the company.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. It would make sense. What had happened was when I had designed this theater, Broadway show with chefs, it was very much a part of the opening night. We named Share Strength as the recipient of the gala, of the opening night gala. And when the show had run its course, it was a limited engagement. I was thinking what I was going to do next and where I was going to evolve to within the culinary community. And I had been talking to Share Strength and their needs at the time. So we had continued these conversations, and to a point where, you know, I went down to Washington, where they're headquartered, and they brought me on board as an expert in the field of culinary relationships, fundraising, special events. And so I kind of didn't have an official title so much as I was out there doing a lot for the organization, but on right. an official basis, not as a volunteer. And that started in 2004, and then I created a platform which I thought was really, you know, kind of this cool upscale intimate environment using chefs, and so we called it A Tasteful Pursuit, which was the name of the series. These were dinner series around the country, so we would have a prominent host restaurant in each city hosting and then inviting the guest chefs, a couple from local and a couple from out of town.
So how did you go about finding chefs and restaurants around the country to host?
It's phenomenal, this industry that we're in. We're really fortunate to be in it. Chefs are amazing. You know, they're talented, they're a little bit rogue, they're artists, they're businessmen, they're a little bit of everything. And what they also are very philanthropic without them even, you know, using that word. You know, they're just giving, and it's part of the culture. So if I would approach a chef, which I most of the time knew, or even if I didn't know them, and I just called and I thought, hey, you know, I know you've got the greatest restaurant here in this city. It's been talked about a lot. I don't know if you've done anything with Share Strength, but we'd be honored if you would host a dinner for us, and this is what we're looking for. And more than nine and a half times out of ten, it was a yes. I'd love to do it. I'd be honored, you know. And and then we would build the chef team with the host restaurateur or chef, and they were basically the architect of the dinner and who they wanted to invite, or we would want to engage new chefs, and we would ask them if we could invite, you know, XYZ chef to come to his dinner. So along the way, we've worked with, you know, Charlie Palmer's, Daniel Belews, and all level, but mostly high level, but
very high level. I think your lineup has always been very impressive, and I know I name any city in the U.S. and you pretty much can tell me, yeah, I know a chef there, and we did a dinner there, and he's fabulous.
Yeah, they're all great, and so if you go to Dallas, Stephen Piles has been with Share Strength. Now a lot of the chefs have relationships with Share Strength prior to me being there. So I'm there 10 years, but organization's over 28 years now. And Stephen Piles, who may or may not be a household name here in New York with the general public. He certainly is in the culinary community. But so he was he's been around for a long time with Share Our Strength as a supporter when he was even in Denver and then moved to Dallas. So this is kind of the way it works. You know, then he took 5 or 6 years away from Share Our Strength, just kind of doing his own thing or finding his own, you know, new style, a new restaurant he was going to open. And then I approached him and got him back involved. And right now he's doing, you know, now he's like 7 years in a row of doing dinners with us again. And so this Tasteful Pursuits dinner series really became a property that we were able to sell as a partner. Now we were able to bring in corporate partners because it was more than just a one-off in one city. So now it had marketing opportunities and promotional benefits for a sponsor. So we brought in Lexus. They sponsored it. Co-Brown, you know, we brought in Brown-Forman. So it was a great opportunity for us to build not just fundraising opportunities but also develop corporate relationships. And then while at the same time cultivating donors who are very high-end, because these are more intimate than the big platform that Share Our Strength is basically was known for only, which was Taste of the Nation, which is the preeminent grazing tasting event in the country.
I've been active in Taste of a Nation. I think it's that's the one I think I've been myself most participatory in, if you could say. But and the dinners, usually the price tag on them is too high, but you're raising money, you're raising funds, and people are willing to pay for these mm-hmm. these chefs and dinners. Because you put together this, the lineup is always so stellar that you have these relationships is really impressive.
Thank you. Yeah, and that's what we try to. That's what the organization tries to do. It tries to tap into now all different demographics across the U.S. And that being so, the dinners, which are now called No Kid Hungry Dinners, and I'll talk about that in a second. But between the dinners and Taste of the Nation, the dinners were very high end and intimate. Taste of the Nation is more 50 restaurants under one roof with all the sampling and, you know, live auction, all the activity going on and live music.
Which also has an amazing lineup of chefs and restaurants participating.
Truly, one of usually the top 50 in each city. But it's just not sit down. It's not white gloves.
It's a different experience.
It's a different experience, exactly. And then we have bake sale, the Great American Bake Sale, which is what you would think across the country. And we raise millions that way. And the Great American Dine Out, which then participates with the Olive Gardens of the world and those types of TGIFs and those and Joe's Crab Shack. And so that level, casual dining level, is now also involved. And that has actually become one of our largest fundraising platforms.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, along with corporate donors and individual donors. And that, so that's, and that's the machine that runs Share Our Strength, which leads me to its No Kid Hungry platform, what is the national cry for, you know, solving hunger and connecting kids to nutritious feeding programs that are already available in this country. So Share Our Strength's goal is to end childhood hunger in the United States.
And it's a tremendous effort that you're making. And I just, while I'm thinking about it, I should point out that the website, if you want to, anyone wants to learn more about Share Our Strength, you should go to it's nokidhungry.org. So everything's kind of changed to the No Kid Hungry mission, which makes sense.
Correct. And we've been able to leverage that in a great way. As Share Our Strength's name is known as now the back of the house that operates all of these different platforms, No Kid Hungry is our sounding cry to the country. Like, let's just help these kids that are in need. And we've enlisted, you know, Jeff Bridges is our Hollywood spokesperson. We've got just great, you know, all Tom Vilsack, who's the Secretary of Agriculture for, you know, under the Obama administration, has been a big supporter of ours. Governor O'Malley in Maryland has backed us, and we have proven in certain states, Maryland being one of them, and there are a number of others, that we can actually end childhood hunger in those states just by connecting kids and getting them access to the feeding programs that are existing.
Great. I was going to ask you, for any chefs or restaurateurs out there who would like to get more involved in Share Strength, how would you suggest they do that if they're not someone you're already reaching out to and doing a dinner or involved in an event? What's a good way to get involved?
Well, they could call me or they could just go on the
call
website.
Call Joe, everyone.
Yeah, exactly. They'll go on the website in a direction to in any way, shape, or form, in a multitude of manners in which way you might want to get involved, if it's straight donation or if it's a lending hand or if you want to be a volunteer chef or if you want to be involved in our Cooking Matters program, which is a nutrition and education program, which is huge for us, and it cements what we're all about. It's not just ending childhood hunger, but it's also helping families who are in poverty and how to cook on a budget and make nutritious foods for their kids and families.
Terrific. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. So we're going to take another short break. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Well, Miss Louise, can't you understand?
You are listening to Miss Louise by the California Honey Drops on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Stay tuned for more from All in the Industry.
So get back your broken heart. Well, Miss Louise, why can't you see?
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. You know, there's no more telling aspect, no more revealing virtue of a group of people having evolved in a lovely way than how they feed themselves, how they entertain, how they put food on the table, what they put on the table. Heritage Radio Network provides the clearest evidence that there's hope for us yet. Heritage Radio's like Fairway Market in that we both care deeply about what you're having for dinner tonight. Heritage Radio Network is not just about food, though. Every time I tune in, I learn something about things other than food, too. Architecture, design, stuff like that. But from where I stand, I still say, if you can't eat it, what's the point? For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
Hi, welcome back. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer, and I'm here, my guest today is Joe Allegro of Share of Strength. So now we're going to do a little speed round. I don't know if you'd call it a game, but I hope it's fun. It's just, I'm going to ask, say, if you, are you nervous?
Yeah, I'm very nervous. Go ahead. Is this Family Feud?
It's just...
Like we already know which the best answer is?
I don't really know what to call it besides a speed round. There's no right or wrong answer.
Okay.
It's basically either or topics I will give you, and you just tell me, just name the one that either mm-hmm. you favorite or mm-hmm. or your reaction or
Fine.
Whatever.
Washing machines.
Kind of like I'm going to say like chocolate or vanilla.
Right.
So,
gotcha.
Strawberry. There's no right or wrong. Or you could say strawberry. Okay. It's not on the list though. Okay. Here we go. Eat in or eat out?
Definitely eat out.
East Coast or West Coast?
Definitely East Coast. These are easy so far, Sherry. I love this.
How about silent auction or live auction?
Live auction.
I knew that was the answer,
yeah,
too.
It's the energy. There's nothing better. And our good friend Billy Harris, who does a lot of work with us, a celebrity in his own right, and he'll always remind you of that. He's done a lot of events with us, but it's a lot of fun to see when an auctioneer can tell jokes and keep it moving and get it and nail it and raise the money. It's a great energy. Sorry.
Yeah. No. Billy's great, and actually, I'll jump ahead. Just my last one was Billy Harris or Billy Harris.
Right. Exactly.
because he does. You have to see him in action, but he's so good as an auctioneer and host, and he does all of your Share of Strength events. He seems to be on the plane every other day.
Yeah, and for those of you who don't know Billy, he's a wonderful guy, and also I have to say this because it's true, for 3 years or more, he donated his time to our organization, and now, of course, we're able to take care of him And even still, it's still not what someone who does so much as much for us should be getting. But he's grateful for our relationship too, and he's a great individual. Talks a lot, but he's a great individual. Anyway, enough about.
Well, Billy. That's why he's a good auctioneer, right? He has to be able to be very quick. Okay, a few more of the speed round here. We'll go back. Wine, beer, or cocktail?
They switch, and I will say that for those who care,
wine
is on the bottom of the barrel for me right now, and I'm going to go beer, and then spirits is number one.
All right, here's to the spirits. Tasting menu or a la carte?
A la carte, absolutely. We're tasting menued out.
Yeah, that seems to be a lot of people's opinion these days. All right, a few more. Food Network or Cooking Channel?
Food Network still, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Top Chef or Iron Chef?
Top Chef.
Chef owners or host owners?
Chef owners. Well, for the listening audience, you might want to describe what a host owner is.
A host, I think, sorry there, I lost my headphones. A host owner, I've been working with Le Père Gord, this classic French restaurant that's going to be 50 years old next year. And it's back then when they started, Georges Bergaud, he was the host, he was the owner. And that was more of the what was common with places like the Cirque. So now it seems there's much more chef owners, where back 50 years ago it was opposite. So a host owner is just someone who's the owner but not not in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great. It's a really an awesome question. It shouldn't be part of a speed round. It should be an entire show for you.
All right. Well, I'll see if I can get another show. But for now, which do you prefer?
Well, I have so many. It's not even a prefer. It's just that we have so many chef friends who own their own restaurants right now, and then there are silent partners involved with those folks. But boy, there is really something cool about the classic Cirio of, you know, of Le Cirque. It's and there, I just sentimentally, I'm going with them.
All right.
I'm old New York.
Fabulous. Well, that's my last speed round is New York or New Jersey.
The Hudson River right in between.
Well, thanks for playing. You did great.
Thank you, Sherry. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right. Now we're gonna do some industry news of the week, which just a few hot topics. One was there was the Women in Whites Gala on this past Friday, which was James Beard Foundation event. Did you go?
I did not go, but I know it was very successful. They raised close to $500,000 just in the live auction alone. They had a lot of wealthy people in the room and supporters, and I heard it was fabulous.
Yeah, I did too. And I think Billy did the auction.
He did, yeah. And Susan Ungaro is doing an amazing job and continues to elevate James Beard to, you know, levels beyond anybody's belief at this point.
Yeah, I agree. I'm a big fan of everything James Beard Foundation does.
Yes.
And the timing of that, I know they had been working on it for months, but it was interesting because the week before this Time Magazine article came out on the gods of food, which struck up a lot of people's opinions on, you know, because no women chefs were included in the article. And so this was an event just of the women in whites. So the timing, I think it almost seemed like they planned it off of the Time Magazine article to say, hey, what about the women? I don't know. I was a little surprised that the article raised so much controversy because it is one article, but then I see the other side. It's Time Magazine, and it's, you know, internationally read.
Women in culinary is bigger and bigger and bigger every day, and it's and it should be. You know, as it intersects with media and TV and all kinds of other offshoots, we find that it. People are looking at culinary now not just as opening a restaurant, being a cook in the kitchen, but that should always be the primary. If you're anything less than that, then you don't deserve to get to any other level. And that's you got to stay true to the craft and the art before you can get to anything else. But I think that you'll a lot more women Michael Simon, we did a dinner a long time ago, and it was not a long time, but about 6 years ago, and we had a women's chef only dinner, and he was the only male chef. And
that's cool.
We invited Michelle Bernstein, Anita Lowe, Tracy Desjardins. You know, we had April Bloomfield. We had some great chefs, Corinne from Avec out in Chicago, and so it was all these great women chefs, and Selena Teo. I can't believe I remembered every single chef that was there that night.
I'm impressed.
Awesome, and it just goes to show you that, and that was 6 years ago, and they were underserved then. It's starting to become more and more commonplace, but let's face it, there were not a lot of women chefs in the business back then. It was a rugged scene in the kitchen, and they didn't want to be part of it. A few did, but it was not easy.
I think so now, too, that I was just – so, you know, I was thinking about this, and I was looking at my client list. I've been doing PR on my own for 10 years, and I haven't really had many women chefs I've worked with. And it's not that I would love to represent them. I just feel the industry is more dominated by men still. I think there's just more men in the industry, and maybe I'm wrong and I'm not looking for them, but Then again, I'm involved in La Dame Escoffier. I was the president of the Women's Culinary Alliance. I'm certainly pro-woman, but it just seems... I was looking at my list, and I'm like, there's barely any women that I've worked with, chefs and owners. So
I think it's... Like I said, I think it's going to change. You're going to see that paradigm shift. And then I also think that... Look, in your industry, Sherry, it's all women.
Well, that I was going to say that. I go to a PR seminar, and it's 99% women and one male. Exactly. So it's just, it's interesting.
It's an interesting business because as a whole, I even see this on the nonprofit level, 75-85% women are supporting the culinary business. You know, you do have the chefs that are predominantly male still, but the balance is starting to change a little bit.
Yeah, well, we'll have to continue have this discussion again in 5 years and see where we're at.
Let's see where we're at. And then let's see where we're at in the PR field and see if you guys are hiring more men.
I don't know. You can you can come over to our side. join the PR people of the world and
You have the hardest job in America in the restaurant business because
thank you.
it's true. I mean, you know, figure it as a restaurant. You know, oh, you got a great placement in Time Magazine this week, and then the following week, well, hello, what did you do for me this week? They never let
you
off the hook.
You can't guarantee anything. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I want to say for your point, you have a lot of clients, and it's hard to juggle the everybody's needs. It's like having 10 kids.
I always say, that's my analogy, that I'm a juggler. It's like all these balls, keeping them all in the air.
Mm-hmm.
Can't let any of them drop.
No. And you're only as good as your last placement.
I know. Right. Well, enough about me. So, my last topic I had, it's actually really sad news. And I saw it on Twitter, which I'm on during the day. And it was news that Charlie Trotter passed away. And I was really in shock when I saw it. I worked for Trotters in 97 and 98. Wow. And it's still... Did you know that? No.
I did not know that.
Yeah, it's still probably the hardest job and the most influential chef I've ever worked with since... And it's been a long time, but I value that experience so much. And when I saw the news, I was just... I couldn't believe it. I mean, he was 54. And he influenced so many people. He was really a culinary master and a pioneer. I mean, back then, he had his vegetable tasting menus. Mm-hmm. Like, nowadays, it's more common. But in 1997, and even I was there when he was at his 10-year mark. So I'm really saddened by the news, and my condolences to his family and friends. And I just, you know, I'll always value the experience I had working for him and just knowing him.
That's awesome. And well said too. And he was influential. Even if one did not work with him, he was just influential because he had fine dining before, you know, it even had a strong category name to it. And he basically owned Chicago for a long time. And when you thought of Chicago, all you thought of was Charlie Trotter, and it became, well, now, of course, we can list 10 chefs and three, you know, right off the top of our heads that are.
And a few of them, they came from Trotters, though. I mean, Grant Ackett's worked for Charlie Trotter. Matthias Merges, I think I'm saying his name right. He was there when I was there. He was there for like 14 years, and now he has a few restaurants in Chicago.
Right. A lot of chefs can connect their lineage back to Charlie. And the fact that he died so young also takes the industry, additionally, incredibly hard because he was the icon. He's up there. He's with, you know, he's with those great iconic chefs that we know of that are, they should still be around. Now, Charlie was, did get out of the restaurant business. You know, an intellectual, an influencer, and certainly, sort of marched to his own drum in a way, but it was very incredibly respected as a chef and as a restaurant operator. So, yeah, we lost a great one.
Yeah, we did. Okay, on that sad note, we're going to take a break. We'll come back and we'll wrap things up. I have my solo dining experience of the week and just a few last words with my guest Joe Allegro, and you're listening to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
You are listening to Rain, by the California Honey Drops on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Welcome back. This is Sherry Bayer, and you're listening to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. All right, so now's the time I'm going to give you my solo dining experience of the week. As people who know me or maybe follow me on Twitter would know, I actually dine out quite a bit by myself. I travel by myself, too. And people think it's strange, especially because I'm a woman. I don't. I'm always interested in trying new restaurants. It's not easy to make plans with people every day of the week, so I venture out on my own. And so it's weird to say I'm passionate about it, but I guess I am. So I want to share this past week, my dining adventure was, I was in Midtown East. I had finished a meeting, and I'm normally not in that neighborhood. And so I brainstormed a bit, and I remembered Aburiya Kinosuke, if I'm saying the name correct, and it's on East 45th Street between 2nd and 3rd, and it had been on my list for a long time. It's a Japanese restaurant, and so I popped in, and I was able to get a seat at the counter, which to me, this is my tip. If you're solo, go eat at the counter or the bar, because two things, it's an experience you get to, you're instantly entertained. I was watching the sashimi chef right in front of me make my dinner and everyone else's. And it was quite fascinating, especially because I am such a food person. And second, it's social. You'll meet people. You can stir up a conversation with people around you, and you won't feel like you're dining alone as much. So I highly recommend people, don't be afraid to go out. Eat by yourself, and if you go early and you go by yourself, and even if it's a hot restaurant, you're most likely to get in because you're solo, and they can usually find a seat for one person. So that's that. And we're going to wrap up here. My guest today has been Mr. Joe Allegro of Share Strength, and I wanted to see if you had any final thoughts, comments?
Sherry, I just have to thank you for you know, offering me this opportunity to talk about the industry and from my perspective, and because I come at it not from a chef, and not originally from the business, more from entertainment and I saw the actual merger of the entertainment world and the chef world come together, and I think that, you know, it is very, very much now one and the same. And
you really did. You were, I would say, a pioneer of that combination.
Yeah. Back in the day, we had, again, it was just so, it was all, Food Network startup, we had no budgets, everything had to run, you know, and lean, mean, and get it done, and get chefs in the kitchen, and get them on TV, and somehow make that miracle happen.
Well, you did a fabulous job, and I'm so excited for you to be here, and to make the trek from Jersey to Brooklyn, just for this.
I would only do it for you.
No, I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you.
And always, always love spending time with you. So the last part of my show is, now this is a pilot, so I'm not exactly sure who my next guest is, but I would like you, if you could, it's most likely going to be a food or beverage consultant. And so I'd like if you could propose a question to that person, something you would like to know, and then I will be asking them that on my next show to kind of tie this series together.
I think the question that comes to mind always when we have chefs who are owners, how do they ensure that the quality of the menu items is great as they are in the restaurant that they're actually working in. So when they open up their second and third and fourth places, I've heard chefs in the industry themselves say the quality goes down. It's almost impossible to keep it up. But how do they, but no one really is talking about that or is going to broadcast that too loudly. So my question to you, to that guest would be, is it a good thing for a chef to expand too big? You almost have to do it if the opportunity's there, but can you actually keep it constrained and keep your empire to within reach? I know one restaurateur up in the east side, Upper East Side, and all of his restaurants, three or four of them, are just like within a stone's throw of each other. So that is the question. How do you maintain quality when you have quantity if you're a chef?
Great question. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks for coming out here today and joining me on this episode of All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. A special thanks also to producers Jack Inslee and Aaron Fairbanks, and to all of you out there listening. Have a good one.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.